Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Washington podcast with your host, Vincent Cavallari.
Take these shoes, quit clocking down some dead end street. Take these shoes and make them fit. Yeah.
Good day, everyone. Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Mill Creek View podcast. I'm your host, Mill Creek City Councilman Vincent Cavallari, and this is the Mill Creek View podcast Washington edition. As always, we are excited to have you with us. We invite you to check us out at mcview.us. Please subscribe, like us, comment, whatever you choose. We'd love to hear from you, but do subscribe. We do need subscriptions. That's how we pay the bills, folks. And we promise to make this a good use of your valuable time. And in keeping with that same promise, it's our mission to continue to bring you great guests. Great guests, really, that really have their finger on the pulse of the community and people you want to hear from and people you certainly need to hear from. And tonight's guest is no different. Award-winning independent journalist Jonathan Cho will be joining us, and we are, of course, very excited to have him on. And we'll bring him out in a few moments. And remember, here at the Mill Creek View podcast, our mission is very simple. It is to always endeavor to make this place a place where dialogue and debate will thrive and survive, and the truth will always have a home. And that is my eternal pledge to all of you. Friends, there are very few occupations in America that the Constitution spells out specifically, giving them unilateral protections under the law. Of course, I'm talking about the First Amendment and the Free Press Clause. It's codified within the first bullet simply because none of the other speech provisions could exist without each other. America's founders understood the necessity of a free press and its critical role to ensure the survival of a people's republic. Coming from tyranny provided them with unique insight. Unfortunately, America's free press has evolved into something altogether different than the founders had envisioned. What we see today is the creation of the news in lieu of reporting the news. And friends, journalism was once a hallowed profession of the working man and woman. You weren't going to become a millionaire, but your mission was clear. You were the detectives of the truth, and you took this role very serious. You simply wanted to report on the facts obtained through the investigatory journalism. Sounds simple, right? For years, this was true for stories like Watergate, Iran-Contra, far too many others to name, where the truth had become so buried in government bureaucracy it was almost non-existent. But true reporters brought it to light. Regrettably, the profession as we know it today has become overrun with radical progressive Democrats, and they've effectively run it into the ground. And as a result, they've lost leadership. They've lost the public trust. And sadly, they've lost every measure of respect in the industry. And for that, they're dying. Apparently ignoring crisis after crisis and creating a corporate narrative and passing it off as news doesn't sell a lot of papers. But this is how the free press conducts itself today. But this is why independent journalism is incredibly important to America's survival going forward. Because political activists now run the daily news gauntlet and fabricate nothing more than one-sided, politically motivated propaganda. Trump rightfully dubbed them fake news, and they hate him for it, of course. The media's blackout of the southern border crisis should have been the biggest story of our time. The so-called journalists have betrayed the American people along with their constitutional duty to inform. They continue to provide cover for the atrocities being committed on the southern border. Stories meant to be disseminated to the American people are stifled in favor of political ideology. And friends, that's just simply un-American. Here's why. Objective reporting breaks through the fog of government secrecy, but more importantly, it creates a vessel to hold the bad guys accountable. And this is how the free press was intended to work. This was the idea behind the founder's vision. We are going to take a short break, so please stay with us. We will be back shortly with Jonathan Cho. I know you're going to enjoy today's show. He's a great guy, and he's really in the know, and I certainly respect his work in journalism. So please stay tuned. Hang on. It's all about the time we spend, those we have to thank. Thank all those good guys and gals for being such good friends. Baby, that's what it's all about, till the bitter end.
It's only money, not worth the paper. It has no warmth when you hold it in your hands.
Welcome back to the show. I think you're going to be glad you stuck around a little bit, and the only cost of admission was a subscription. Imagine that. Tonight's guest is a journalist and senior fellow with Discovery Institute's Center on Wealth and Poverty. Prior to joining Discovery, he spent several years as one of the lead reporters at Como TV and was consistently the top-rated television station in Seattle. His in-depth stories on crime and deep-dive investigations into the homeless crisis has led to measurable results in the community, including many changes in public policy. He has more than two decades of experience in television news behind the scenes and in front of the camera for ABC, NBC, Fox, CBS, and many others. He's also been nominated and honored with multiple industry awards, including an Emmy. He spent several years teaching classes on emerging media and entrepreneurship to underprivileged youth in Chicago's inner city. As an independent journalist, he also continues to regularly contribute to the Mill Creek View, the Linwood Times, and has reported on exclusive stories this past year for the Daily Wire and the Post-Millennial. He is a New England native and Boston University Journalism School graduate, but as a New Yorker, I won't hold that against him. Mill Creek View audience, please welcome Jonathan Cho. Welcome to the show.
Vince, thanks for including my college credit there. I thought I was too old to get a mention for my undergrad university, but hey,
you're never too old. If you earned it, as far as I'm concerned, if you earned it, you get to say it. So, how you doing?
Hey, thanks for having me. And finally, we're connecting. I know you've reached out a few times, and we just haven't been able to connect till now. So it's a great time.
You've just been busy. I know the last time we spoke, I think you were in Boston. So what was going on up in Boston?
Well, like many parts of the U.S. right now, Boston's dealing with the illegal immigration crisis, and that's my hometown. And you know what's going on in New York. New York, I would say, is like 5 to 6x worse than Boston. But Boston's my hometown. I grew up in Brookline, right outside of Boston, and some of the families there are now actually hosting some of these illegal immigrants from Haiti. So it's really a interesting, dynamic, complicated situation. But it's unsustainable, as we all know at this point.
And sadly, much of it isn't being reported. It's taking people like yourself, the independent journalists, to really stick their neck out on the line and get out there and do it. So I thank you for that. So maybe we'll start with that. What happened to journalism in America? Why has the independent journalist been thrust into the mix like this?
Yeah, I've been in the business now, corporate media, for 20-plus years, and it wasn't until the past couple of years where I made this transition into independent where I really started to see mainstream media start to decline. I mean, just look at the data. Fewer and fewer people are watching, you know, television news. The audience is getting older and older, and newspapers are literally going away, creating news deserts in many of these communities. Especially here in Washington State. So, there are a whole bunch of reasons, right? There's the trust issue. There's the fact that these corporate conglomerates now, just a handful, own hundreds of stations, and, you know, they're putting profits before the journalism. And you have people, you know, the journalists now kind of realizing this and either leaving the business altogether or not entering the business. And what I mean by that is there's a pipeline problem at the college level. I go back and stay in touch with some of my professors at Boston University and friends at Syracuse, Northwestern, and Columbia, some of the top journalism schools across the nation, and they're all saying fewer and fewer kids are going into journalism. In fact, at Boston University, I don't think they have a television major anymore. So it's just the state of the industry. But that also opens up an opportunity, again, for independence, right? I mean, look at the podcast we're doing. You could be any Joe Schmo off the street, and if you have a passion for this, you can immediately have a platform. And social media, of course, has been the game changer, especially platforms like X, which really, I believe, right now is the best for any type of freedom of speech.
And you weren't here for my opening monologue, but I touched on that a little bit where I just talked about there's this almost a betrayal of the journalistic integrity that it's the one industry that's given a constitutional guarantee, and they've done a 180 on it. So what does make a good journalist, though?
I mean, that's a great question. That definition continues to change. I feel like each year, because of social media, now these days it's no longer about the organization you're with necessarily. It's about whether or not you have a following, whether or not you're an influencer. That's what I'm starting to see more of. We've also seen a lot of bias from journalists that work for some of the mainstream legacy media outlets. And, you know, what that means is they tend to lean left and Democrat, and it shows in their reporting. And there's nothing wrong, in my opinion, with having a political stance or conviction or, you know, an opinion. It's just you've got to be fair and accurate. You've got to be willing to get both sides and give all sides a fair shot. And we're seeing less and less of that. And I think one of the cardinal sins that the average, you know, consumer, viewer, listener may not realize is that there's really this sin of omission in journalism now that's more evident than ever. In other words, there's certain stories that are just not being covered. There are angles that are not being brought up. And again, it's just become a danger to democracy because the communities, especially these news deserts I was talking about, don't have access to information and data they need to make sound decisions.
I like the term you use, news desert. I haven't heard that one before, but it's factual. I know you worked for Como for many years. Can we talk about that?
Let's talk about it. Now I'm gone. Now I've been there. It's been 2 years since I exited that place, so I'm willing to open up all the trade secrets and what's behind the closet.
Well, I love it because you were one of the, I guess would say, the innovators of independent journalism in this region where you broke the story on kind of Seattle dying and the homelessness and whatnot. That was kind of your swan song. Let's get into that a little bit. You're no longer with Como. Apparently, they don't like your journalistic direction. Is that a fair statement?
Well, they didn't like the fact that I thought for myself and that you know, I really wanted to cover certain stories. They didn't want certain stories covered. And I basically said, screw you, I'll do it on my own time. And they didn't like that. And we decided at the end to part ways. I was a disruptor there. Look, at the end of the day, when you go back to, you know, look back at my career in legacy media, I challenge anyone right now listening, if you've worked with me or if I've worked under you, I don't think anyone's going to question my work ethic, or the actual journalism, the quality of work that ended up on air. But I think you'll have a few people say, wow, Cho really is someone who thinks for himself. He's a renegade. He's an independent. So I've sort of always had this independent streak. And at the end of the day, it doesn't jive with corporate media. And I got to a point, I'm not getting any younger. I'm not just going to take a paycheck anymore to stay at a, you know, local TV station when I really believe journalism and, you know, truth seeking and truth telling is my calling. I can't do it in this environment anymore. So looking back in hindsight, I wouldn't change anything, honestly, in terms of the way things shook out, because, again, as the saying goes, it was a blessing in disguise. It really unleashed me. You know, I was unshackled after I left Como to really now go, you know, 10x on, you know, the journalism that needed to be, you know, done and the stories that needed to be told on the streets.
Isn't that you said independent and renegade? Those are two very, very strong words in journalism that you seldom hear. But isn't that really the essence of journalism and what they've gotten away from? Like, I don't hear the breaking stories like WMD or weapons of breaking story, Watergate. We don't hear those stories these days. They won't even report on the border. What happened to these guys? And I know it's corporate and whatnot, but
yeah, I think there's a lot of that. I think we're starting to realize that a lot of these legacy media outlets are aligned with certain political parties, and some critics have called it now regime media because they're essentially parroting the talking points, for example, from the Biden administration. And of course, you know, you've got the left and the progressive far left, embedded in, the Democratic Party. But, you have the same with, conservatives as well, and Republicans and the GOP. And you have the far right. So there's a wide spectrum. So I'm not just picking on one particular party. But I think the reality now is that I'm learning as well as I'm getting older and I think wiser and really experiencing and seeing this stuff for myself that, again, there is no doubt that every news organization is different. There's no one size fits all. And consumers really have to discern and really become sophisticated media consumers to understand this ever-changing landscape that we're in now.
I almost feel that people don't even want to hear the truth anymore. I mean, Seattle is a great example of the decay that's taking place, and you had a firsthand look at that. Let's just talk about that a little bit. Homelessness. I mean, I know you're that's one of your in your wheelhouse. How bad is the home? The newspapers don't report it. You don't hear about it. You may get a gloss over on one of the news channels if someone is killed or a hit and run driver, but that's about it.
Well, let's talk about what's happening here in America. And this is a story that I believe is not just being glossed over in the Pacific Northwest, in Washington State, or in Seattle. It's happening nationally as well. Last year, the data showed that homelessness was up 12% across the nation. That's 650,000 Americans. That includes women, children, families, veterans, seniors. I mean, this is unacceptable. This should be the lead story. And, of course, fueling all of this is the fentanyl crisis. You know, we're losing an entire generation to drug overdoses. Mm-hmm. And we're just barely hearing about this. So, I examined this very question. This past year, I got into a fellowship with another conservative activist out here. You probably heard of Christopher Rufo. He's now with Manhattan Institute. He used to be with Discovery right before I showed up. And, I got into his fellowship. And part of that fellowship was examining some of these, big overarching issues. And one of the issues I'm currently examining is how, this narrative of homelessness has just kind of emerged where if you ask certain experts and the activists and the academics, they'll say homelessness is an affordable housing issue.
Yes.
But now that I've actually looked into this and really focused on this beat and looked at my own independent data out of Discovery Institute, in fact, the root causes are drug addiction, mental illness, and broken relationships.
Yes.
And the fact that mainstream legacy media, first of all, has hook, line, and sinker been parroting the whole affordable housing crisis narrative, especially the NPRs of the world, and there's been no counter narrative to that. Which is why this lie has been perpetuated. So, what I'm trying to do now at Discovery Institute as well and as an independent journalist is to, again, understand why there isn't a counter narrative. And it's quite frankly, we can blame the Democrats here in Washington State for causing all these problems with, failed public policies. But honestly, I also challenge the Republicans as well and the GOP. You go back to them, like, what's your solution? Why have you allowed only one narrative to dominate? And, I'm realizing now we really are in an information war. Mm-hmm. And it has to do not only with media, it has to do with politics. It also has to do with, the average citizen. And at the end of the day, you have to care. You have to want to look beyond the headlines and ask these questions and be curious. So I really, again, see the opportunity of independent journalists rising up and telling the actual story and at the very least, including this counter narrative. But also I see a huge role now for citizen journalists. That means somebody who works at the pizza store, who has an iPhone, who sees, you know, an encampment where drug dealing is happening, and you record that video for 1 minute, and you go online, and then it goes viral, and then the rest of mainstream media jumps on that, and then, you know, law enforcement finds out, public officials find out, and then that gets cleaned up. I mean, that's citizen journalism in action leading to change, and I'm excited about that type of stuff, Vince.
I think that's an incredible point, and sitting on the council, as I do in the city that I represent, it's the same thing. Action is taken when citizens show up. Action is taken when emails are received, phone calls, phone messages, all the above. And so is it fair to say that you've made a few enemies last couple of years?
Well, let's just say that the folks who don't like their narrative essentially exposed or undercut are the ones who don't like me, and that's usually the far left progressives. And I'm not going to name anyone in particular unless you choose to bring any up. But yeah, that's what I'm battling right now. You have people, again, who have for so long held on to power, at least in my space. Part of that power structure includes what's called the homeless industrial complex.
Yeah, yes.
That's these nonprofits, that's these service providers, these housing operators who stand to lose millions of dollars if the truth comes out. Now, I'm not saying all of them are bad, but, you know, I've done a recent, you know, expose on a nonprofit called Plymouth Housing recently, and we were simply invited in by one of the tenants, and this is what's considered permanent supportive housing. It sounds great on the surface, but it's low barrier. In other words, drug use is allowed. This is also under the premise of what's called harm reduction. This place gives out meth pipes, needles, fentanyl foil, I mean, you know, heroin cookers in the name of harm reduction without requiring any treatment or services. And you have these tenants now literally dying behind closed doors at a similar clip as the overdoses on the street. So I went in there and exposed that, and, you know, obviously that's part of the homeless industrial complex that, you know, these folks don't want, you know, me to talk about.
It's so I've seen it firsthand as well, being on the law enforcement side and being on the political side now. It's given me a unique perspective that as a citizen I didn't have before. So I do my research. I know that Seattle spends $87,000 per homeless individual. I know that the number you gave, I think, 12% across the nation. Well, it's upwards of 60% in Seattle where homelessness has increased. So this is getting worse and worse by the day. And we know that these are in progressive-led Democrat cities and states. It's clearly the politics, and they've built these layers, to your other point, whether it's Plymouth Housing, to keep the money funneling, keep the money flowing, where they have these elected leaders who are stooges at the bottom. And then, of course, these business opportunists at the top. And when they collide, you have 87,000 per homeless individual. And you have the mess that we have. I mean, you go to Florida and the economy's thriving. You go to Texas and businesses are fleeing. I mean, are flocking there just to get in there. So, all right, I'll get off my high horse here. How has it been trying to trust others in the industry, working with other journalists?
I've never been asked that question, but now that you ask it, you know, after I got fired from Como, you've heard that saying before. You know who your friends are during a crisis, and you know, I really found out real fast. You know, all the people that I thought who were my industry friends, people I helped numerous times, unconditionally, no questions asked. You know, when I needed maybe that reference, because I didn't know I was going to go independent. I thought I was going to go back and jump to another station. I needed a reference or two. They went radio silent. They just ghosted me. My former, you know, and I'll just say it right now, my news director, I won't name him, you know, he's no longer at Como. He's now working elsewhere. When I called him to reach out for help, you know, and just get a reference, never returned texts, emails. And, you know, again, it's because I get it. You don't want to be associated with somebody who was fired, let alone fired for allegedly promoting the Proud Boys, which I'll let your audience Google that story before, you know, getting into all that again for the sake of time. But, yeah, I think at the same time, though, a lot of my industry colleagues are now realizing, wow, he's still thriving now as an independent journalist. And some of them are now coming around and asking, how did you do it?
And again, there's the validation, right? It's the same thing during the beginnings of COVID. I was telling Steve earlier, I've never written in my life. I started writing a column. There had to be a counterpoint. There had to be another side to the story, the border. There had to be another. You have to hear it. And even if you're not going to listen, it's going to be in script. It's going to be online. You have to have the counterpoint. That's the only way this works. So do you really enjoy covering the controversial topics, so to speak?
Yeah, as crazy as it sounds, I call it the chaos beat, and I wouldn't have it any other way. In many ways, when Como, that chapter of my life closed, a new one opened up, and I realized how many stories, again, were not being told, that were being missed. That's what I really enjoy going after. Again, as an investigative reporter and now kind of a hybrid commentator at times as well, because, you know, I go on cable news and spout off at times about what I think is happening on the ground. I've really enjoyed kind of this pivot as well into this new independent hybrid world as a journalist. So I do ultimately enjoy what I'm doing. Yes, is it risky at times because I go into encampments and get, you know, chased by Antifa far-left activists? Yeah, it is. But, you know, in the end, you know, I'm not stupid. I'm not going to intentionally put myself in a dangerous situation. And in the end, it's rewarding and it's gratifying what I'm doing.
Do you know when you have a story? I mean, you get that juice flowing in your gut. Do you know when you got it?
Yeah, and I think my standard is simple. You know, we are now video first. You know, when people think journalism, I think maybe gut instinct is to immediately think newspapers, right, or television, and of course radio and so on and so forth. But now it's like, you know, what'd you get on your iPhone? And does this have an opportunity to go viral on social media? I mean, that's when you know you have a story, right? And you won't know really until you finally post it and so on and so forth. But, you know, on all my platforms, I have nearly 500,000 viewers now. So usually when I have a video and I have something, I'm going to know right away by the response. You know, recently, just today, John Stossel, former ABC News and Fox News correspondent, you know, he took part of my landlord-tenant fight story out of Bellevue, where Jaskaran Singh is dealing with a serial squatter. And he used that in one of his national pieces. So he retweeted that, and then Elon Musk subtweeted that. I guess repost now. It's not Twitter anymore. It's X. So that was kind of cool to see that. And then the story has millions of views. So I know, again, that's kind of validation, but I also know it's having an impact with measurable results.
So, I mean, it's fair to say that you're of course you're still in the game. Do you think it's too far gone, or is it going to require us to stay in the trenches quite a bit longer to move this back to the middle?
What are you talking about? American journalism, or are you talking about the homeless crisis? Talking about the drug crisis?
No, a little of everything, but I want to stick with journalism here because we're going to talk about you a little bit.
Oh, well, it's a foregone conclusion. You know, legacy media, the old ways of consuming and, you know, reporting, those days are numbered. Yeah. I mean, it's public knowledge. You read the trade magazines. The executives are saying we're going all digital. I mean, look what's happening even at CNN. You're getting rid of the high priced talent. People make millions of dollars, and it's now also a streaming strategy, a social media strategy. I mean, a local station in Boston, the local CBS there, I know a few reporters, they made some recent hires based on the number of TikTok followers they have, which goes back to the point I was making. They're looking for influencers now. You know, people who can kind of tell the story. I mean, but at the same time, you know, especially, you know, if you're an attractive female, that helps.
Would you ever go work for one of the big guys again?
Chances are slim to none, but never say never. It would all depend on how much control I have. It would all depend on, you know, what type of restrictions. And that's the problem with corporate media right now. The restrictions, as an independent, as someone who's backed by a think tank, a nonprofit that I'm aligned with, you know, I have tremendous freedom to not only chase the stories that matter to me, but also to be compensated. I'm making more money than I've ever made in my entire career.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and it has to do also with the social media profit share that I have access to. If I worked in corporate media, the corporate giants would take and own all my content. But now I also own the intellectual property, the IP, and I can monetize and leverage that as much as I want. And hopefully people listening, the one takeaway I have is there is a way to be an independent journalist, but you've got to start thinking now as an entrepreneur. That is going to be a new class of journalism, and it's the only way to sustain this.
You mentioned social media, and that's really how folks get their news and all their information today. But we also know that social media sites, and or we'll call them big tech, we also know that they've picked a side essentially as well. And so how do we bring that back? We know Section 230 of the U.S. Code gives them way too much latitude, and we've seen what they're capable of. What's a necessary step for them to maybe bring that, or is that a conversation we shouldn't even have? I mean, is just letting it happen?
No, I think we should be aware of this censorship industrial complex. It's real. It's alive and well. I'm thankful for journalists like Michael Schellenberger, an independent with Public. He's been exposing a lot of that, how, you know, the universities, the academics, the politicians, Washington, D.C., as well as the tech companies, they're all in bed together outside of places like Rumble and X. Yeah, I mean, you've got up and coming, social media platforms, but the main ones under the big tech giants like, the Googles of the world, or, TikTok or Meta with Facebook and Instagram. I mean, that's all being censored right now. So this goes back to the point I was making. That's why it's so important right now. Another flip side to that is not only the censorship piece, but also the misinformation, right? You're going to get, you don't have the gatekeepers anymore being credible. Like, I'm talking about the legacy media, like the newspapers, the TV stations were considered the gatekeepers. You could trust that they would put out truthful and accurate stories. But that's why the independent journalists, quote-unquote, the influencers, people who have a track record are now more important than ever, because not only are you dealing with censorship, you're also dealing with tons of misinformation. You've got to go with people who you could trust. And my simple recommendation is go with somebody you've been following for a long time who has a consistent track record of being fair, accurate, and truthful.
Can we go into what you're working on currently, or is that content sensitive, or?
No, not at all. I mean, it's an ongoing story, I'd be happy to break it down for you. But I've been following this story that's really gone global here in Bellevue, Washington, just 15 minutes outside of Seattle, an elite community where a lot of the big tech companies are now moving as well for various reasons, primarily public safety reasons. Back in November, I first featured a story about, and I referenced him earlier, Jaskaran Singh. He's a Bellevue landlord who's been dealing with a serial squatter by the name of Sang Kim, who's refusing to pay rent. And you would think, hey, go through the legal process, evict a guy. Problem is, the King County courts are backlogged. Hundreds of eviction cases, and this goes all the way back to COVID, causing some of that backlog. But there's also a nonprofit called the Housing Justice Project. And this is really the big story that needs to be told. It's an arm of the King County Bar Association, and Housing Justice Project is accused. And again, they're supposed to be helping low-income tenants, but this group is now accused of representing people like Kim, who are serial squatters, and getting continuances. And again, backing up and delaying the court process and buying extra time for these deadbeat renters. And that's what's happening, not only in King County, but you have all these horrible laws across the nation right now. Just today, though, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, though, finally, signed this new law into existence that does away with squatter rights and makes it easier to evict somebody and gives more power to police to simply get them out of there.
Becomes a felony.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty serious.
I'm going to butt in for – I've heard that a lot of the laws are run – and created by the lawyers who continually make money by being in the courts, because if they don't have cases, they don't make money. So they've created a money trough for themselves, an ongoing revenue stream by building all these situations that you just talked about. They get to be in court their entire life and make money.
Right. Not only that, the Housing Justice Project is taxpayer funded.
Yes.
You get state funds, you get county funds. And this is the key, guys. the lack of transparency and accountability. I reached out to Housing Justice Project numerous times for comment. You know, I've gotten no comment at all. And that's why my reporting has led to sort of this pressure campaign now, where, you know, protests have been happening on weekends. The homeowner is trying to publicly shame Sang Kim into leaving. And now he's going on a, you know, public testimony tour in front of the Bellevue City Council. Yesterday he was in front of the King County Council, and he's now asking these, you know, lawmakers to, at the very least, start audits of what's happening here.
Mm. This is, and in my opinion, and probably shared in the room, this is the mantra. This is progressive leadership. This is the Marxism they preach. And you talk about those attorneys. I work with many of them on a daily basis, and they're Marxists, right? And they are appointed to judge positions, which oversee many of the cases that you're talking about. So they've created their own sort of Ponzi scheme where they are the judge, the jury, and the litigator at the same time. And again, it's to me, it's about the redistribution of wealth, the redistribution of land. We saw that with COVID. We saw that. We see it every day. We see it in the economy. We see it with the squatters. I mean, take your pick on any topic. Without me going too much further into that, what advice do you have, John, for independent journalists? What would you tell them to do besides just picking up an iPhone?
Well, I was going to say that's where you start, but I mean, you've got to know that there is. First of all, you've got to have conviction. You got to believe in what you're doing. I mean, if you don't believe that this is really a calling instead of just a job, I would recommend you don't get into independent journalism because it's there are no guarantees. There have been a lot of, you know, potholes. There have been a lot of risks, uncertainty from legal limbo to just being personally attacked by the far left, who don't like my reporting, lies made up against me. So you've got to have thick skin. But again, more importantly, the backing and the support of the community. And at the end of the day, I'm thankful to be, you know, aligned with Discovery Institute that funds some of my work. But I have to raise a lot of my funding as well. So again, I'm making decent coin right now, but that's because I've, you know, created multiple revenue streams on several social media platforms. But I'm also getting a lot of donations from viewers, from listeners, from readers, and
that's
appreciate that. So that took 2 years, and I don't know if that's the average time, but, you know, I built enough of kind of a support system now. So that's going to be key. To make sure you're willing to not only be the journalist, but also an entrepreneur, the fundraiser, the person that, you know, shakes the hands and kisses the babies, because that's what you're going to have to do now to make it.
Can I just interject real quick? I think that is the future. We've seen the streaming services now online. I haven't watched TV in years. You've got subscription bases now with Substack and others. And you've got individuals like yourself. If you like this, support me. And so what I find is a lot of people, being young or older, like myself, we're just putting our money where we find fruit. Where we're seeing fruit, bore, we're putting our money there, and we're not putting it in someplace else. So that is the future, I believe, is individuals being supported by those who really support them. And if you don't do a good job, guess what? They won't support you. So now you have a gauge on whether or not you're doing a good job.
Exactly.
So how do you think that the public, I mean, because they've obviously opted out for the most part, how do you think they perceive journalism today?
Well, I think what I've seen, and it has to do with our political landscape in America as well, is I feel like when it comes to the way the public views news organizations, they are either completely, you know, don't trust them, or they pick sides. It's become more polarized than ever. You know, back in the day, you could say, "Oh, hey, I trust ABC and NBC, CBS, and so on and so forth." Now it's like, "Oh, no way! I would never listen to those libtards." You know, I'm listening to Newsmax or Fox News. And on the flip side of that, of course, you know, they'll say, "Oh, Fox News lies, Newsmax lies." So, look, My thing has always been, you know, if you lean conservative, you should be watching liberal, quote-unquote liberal media as well, because you need to know what the other side is saying. And if you're a liberal or a Democrat or even far left, listen to what the right has to say. I mean, I don't think it hurts if you use common sense and know how to discern. I mean, some people say, oh, I will never listen to them or watch them. That's all lies. Okay, well, at least, you know, make the case then that it's a lie. Know what they're saying so you know how to respond with the truth. So, you know, I'm kind of in that camp. But in terms of, you know, just American journalism, is it so far gone that it's not coming back? I think journalism in some form is always going to be around. I just feel like the delivery platforms are clearly changing, and it's no longer just going to be about, you know, the anchorman on TV or, you know, the Seattle Times, you know, being the trusted sources right. and outlets. They're going to be just more voices emerging.
I share your view on listening to what other people think and what other opinions think. My alarm clock is set to NPR every morning, and so I get it as soon as I wake up. Helps give me my edge, helps when I put my duty belt on so I know what I'm fighting for.
And I was listening to NPR coming over here, and I was yelling at the radio. I'm like, come on, you're missing the story. It's like you didn't get all the sides here. Why only that side? So,
but we talk real slowly like this so that you can understand us.
Are there journalists that you follow? Are there people that you follow?
Yeah, you know, I still have, you know, a handful of friends who work in the local Seattle market, you know, who I respect tremendously, and they see what I'm doing, and they understand that what I'm doing is fair, accurate, and legitimate. At the same time, I respect where they're at as well, because at the end of the day, they got to put a paycheck on the table, you know, and they have families to support, and I get it, and they're going to do the best they can with what they've been given. But most of the ones that I look up to now are really the independents who are really, you know, making a difference. And like we've been talking about, I think the audience now seeks and looks for people who are coming up with actual measurable results and bringing change. So those are the people that I look for as well.
You make a very good point that I think gets lost or missed by a lot of people is they have to make a paycheck. They have to survive in their career. And so I was on a cruise recently, and I was debating an administrator, a teacher from California of all places. And we got into this conversation about she shared that certain, you know, I thought there was a hypersexualization taking place in America schools, and I made my point. And she didn't disagree with me, but she's at her level, and she's a top administrator. She said, "There's just nothing I have, nothing I can really do. It's you know, I need to keep my job." So, I mean, that's kind of the rub. But I told her it's a cop out. And for instance, and listen, I'm not jumping on a high horse here. When they were going to mandate jabs in the sheriff's office, I said I'd quit. Yep. I'll go work somewhere else.
Yep.
I'm just not going to follow the trumpet. And it's as simple as that. And that's what it takes is, I think, just like your independent journalism, this podcast that I've never done before, Steve, some places are opting out and just deciding to punt. And I understand you got to make a living, but you're going to have to make a stand because there's no other place to run to. And so we don't have too much time left. So I just give me an interpretation of your what's the future for journalism in America? Are independents, are we or you the savior? And I don't mean you personally. I mean the idea of you.
Yeah, I don't know if we're necessarily the savior, but I believe that we are the future. And I believe that now more than ever, there is an opportunity to really bet on yourself, take that risk, and make it. 10 years ago, I don't think I would have been able to say that because at the end of the day, you've got to figure out how you're going to fund your work.
Mm-hmm.
But as we've talked about numerous times now, there are so many funding channels, ways to do this. I mean, traditionally, you know, papers, TVs, and radio, you know, programs relied on advertising. Not anymore. It's donors. It's social media revenue share. What it comes down to is, do people like you? Are you actually doing good work? And if you are, there is money to be made. So I think for my future, I don't know how long I'm going to be with Discovery Institute. I love where I'm at right now as a senior fellow. I get to really, you know, combine, you know, the street journalism with academic research in my area. And that's something that's very unique that I've never been a part of. But my hope and my dream is to ultimately start an independent news organization where I can bring other independent journalists and also help cultivate other independent journalists where they get to also own their intellectual property. They become entrepreneurs, and they're not just beholden to corporate constraints. So they can go out and really cover their communities and serve their communities. And I think that's the key. I'm looking to work and foster, you know, talent that really understands that this is a calling and this is a public trust.
A virtual journalism shark tank is what you're creating. I love it. I absolutely love it. So last question, John. I want to leave it on a real positive note. What is the most positive story that you've covered? Most satisfying. Sorry. Let's go with that.
It actually comes out of Seattle because that's where I spend most of my time. Like I said, I'm usually on the chaos beat. But I think a couple summers ago, King County Executive Dow Constantine tried to ram through a homeless mega shelter into the Chinatown International District. And to see from beginning, middle, and end the community rise up and with zero mainstream media coverage in the beginning, and I was the only guy there doing it, but then to see the rest of local media jump in and start to squeeze the politicians, and when the politicians raised the white flag and said, okay, we're not going to put it here, it's a bad idea to, you know, turn a marginalized minority community into a human dumping ground. And when they blamed me, when Dow Constantine blamed me and, you know, Seattle Councilmember Tammy Morales blamed me for causing this, I took some satisfaction in that.
As you should. As you should. And a victory lap. So the people still have the power. All right. That's all the time we have left for the show today. Thanks so much for being here, John. How can the folks get a hold of you?
A lot of my work's on fixhomelessness.org, but as we've already discussed, I know my audience primarily consumes on social media, so you can find me on X, on YouTube, Instagram, with my handle, at Choeshow, C-H-O-E-S-H-O-W, again, at C-H-O-E-S-H-O-W, Choeshow.
Folks, I advise you to check it out, please. John, thanks again so much for being such a good sport, great guest, and really, and I know I wanted to get more into the issues, but I'm a fan of yours, so I wanted to talk about you a little bit. I had a whole different line of questioning, but I'm glad it went this way, and I hope the public knows a lot more about you. So, folks, please stay tuned. We will be right back with my closing monologue. Welcome back to the show, friends. What a great guest tonight. Incredibly important topic that I just don't think we talk about enough. You know, 2 years ago, I mistakenly assumed that the election cycle of 2022 would really start to right the ship here in America. I thought Republicans would take the House by a large margin. I thought the Senate as well, and I thought they would kneecap a radical admin like Joe Biden. I assumed that with inflation choking the life out of the American people, fentanyl killing a generation, a southern border that's been overrun, and Marxism being taught to our children in the classrooms, that America would simply say, enough, we've crossed the Rubicon. What I didn't factor in was the American media working overtime to overthrow the American people, or its journalists or its reporters doing everything in their power to suppress the free flow of information. The founders believed by giving the free press a high degree of latitude, the idea was that they would conduct themselves with strict adherence to constitutional law and American values. But the evidence that's come forward through whistleblowers and independent journalists like tonight's guest shows that these news organizations and its journalists opened up and created direct communication channels with government operatives to suppress and censor everyday Americans. A direct violation of that same First Amendment that gave them that high degree of autonomy. These same people entrusted with these constitutional protections are actively blocking the dissemination of information to the public. And that's just shocking to me. Anyone that disagreed with matters such as vaccines, January 6th, or today's hit, Ukraine, were targeted and silenced. First Amendment of the Constitution mandates that the government cannot abridge, limit, or censor speech based on its content. Even if the government's motive is sincere and well-intentioned, it must not collide with this constitutional guardrail. Free speech must flow abundantly and unabated in the public square, just as the founders intended, or nothing can work. George Orwell wrote that every record has been destroyed or falsified, every book has been rewritten, every picture has been repainted, every statue, street, building has been renamed, every date has been altered. And that process is continuing day by day, minute by minute. History has stopped. Nothing exists except the endless present in which the party is always right. Friends, that's what the progressives call the new normal. And if that's not cause enough for you to fight back, then I have no idea what is. Friends, I hope you enjoyed today's show. I hope you certainly got something out of it. We had a great guest here tonight, so thanks so much for having him on. To Steve, the producer, thanks for all the work he does behind the microphone there. I really enjoy people that press for the truth. There's an admiration in that sort of work ethic, and it's a lost art. But that's what you call serving the people. Kudos to him. Kudos to John for making a difference in his community. Last, I want to thank you, the Mill Creek View audience, for listening. It's no easy trick bringing you the truth in today's America, but we will always endeavor to do so. So until next time, I'm Mill Creek City Councilman Vincent Cavalieri, and I wish you all God's peace. Take us home, Steve.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.